Christianity was the prevailing moral and intellectual influence of America from its beginnings, so much so that it pervaded all aspects of life, including education and politics. And the founders knew that the fear of God, moral leadership, and a righteous citizenry, a righteous population, were absolutely necessary for their great experiment to succeed. The philosophical concept that undergirded all their actions was the belief that Christian morality was absolutely essential for both the preservation of liberty and the stability of law. They rightly saw that there's a vital link between civil religion and civil government. Okay, therefore, they structured a political climate that was encouraging to Christianity while stopping short of establishing a Christian theocracy. Because a Christian theocracy in this world with fallen men will never work. It will always turn into a tyrant. Okay, a tyrant of the few. That's why they did that. They wouldn't create a Christian theocracy. They emphasized this kind of mindset in their writings over and over again. You have to be blind not to see it. Just give you a few examples. George Washington's farewell address in 1796. He said, quote, "Of all the dispensations and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable to supports. And let us indulge with caution the supposition that morality can be maintained without religion. Reason and experience both forbid us to expect that national morality can prevail in exclusion of religious principles." Well, now, what religious principles is Washington talking about? Was he referring to just any religious principles? Could the nation survive with religious principles of Hinduism or Buddhism or Islam? Well, hardly. He's referring to the religious principles of Christianity, the faith which began and shaped the nation up to that point. Samuel Adams, governor of Massachusetts, a signer of the Declaration, and one of the organizers of the Boston Tea Party, said this. He said, "A general dissolution of principles and manners will more surely overthrow the liberties of America than the whole force of the common enemy." You got that? A dissolution of principles and manners will surely overthrow the liberties of America than a common enemy, an external enemy. He says, "While the people are virtuous, they cannot be subdued. But when they lose their virtue, they will be ready to surrender their liberties to the first external or internal invader." Okay? He also said, "Religion and good morals are the only solid foundations of public liberty and happiness." Benjamin Rush, I mentioned him last week. He's a signer of the Declaration. He was one of the delegates to the Constitutional Congress. He was a physician, and he's the first Surgeon General in America. He said, quote, "The only foundation for a republic is to be laid in religion. Without this, there can be no virtue, and without virtue, there can be no liberty, and liberty is the object and life of all republican governments." Patrick Henry, the first governor of Virginia and a member of the Continental Congress, said, "The great pillars of all government and of social life are virtue, morality, and religion. This is the armor, and this alone that renders us invincible." John Adams, member of the Continental Congress, one of the drafters of the Declaration, the second president of the United States, said, quote, "We have no government armed in power capable of contending with human passions, unbridled by morality and religion. Our Constitution was made only for a moral people, only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other." Our Constitution was made only for moral and religious people. It will not survive for any other kind of person. Thomas Jefferson, governor of Virginia, first secretary of state, principal author of the Declaration of Independence, and third president of America, said this, quote, "No nation has ever yet existed or been governed without religion, nor can be. The Christian religion is the best religion that has ever been given to man. And I, as chief magistrate of this nation, am bound to give it the sanction of my example." James Madison, a political philosopher, he's considered the father of the Constitution, the father of the Bill of Rights. He was a member of the House of Representatives. He was the fourth president of the United States. This is what he said. In official offices, okay, these people are saying this as officials in government. They're not saying in private letters to private people. They are saying it out loud, in public, in their official capacities, okay? James Madison says, "We have staked the whole future of American civilization not upon the power of government, far from it. We have staked the future of all our political institutions upon the capacity of mankind for self-government, upon the capacity of each and all of us to govern ourselves, to control ourselves, to sustain ourselves according to the Ten Commandments of God." I mean, I could go on, okay? It's very clear. If from the historical records that regardless of how orthodox or unorthodox the founders of America were, regardless of whether or not they were just religious or they were genuine believers, the fact is the morality, the virtue, the self-control, the principles, and the worldview they held, that they espoused, and they built this once great nation upon, came from Christianity and the Bible. It didn't come from Buddhism. It didn't come from German Enlightenment or European Enlightenment or the French Revolution or the Masons or the Illuminati or any of that garbage. It came from the principles of Christianity. And so it's irrelevant for somebody to try to prove to me that George Washington was not a Christian. I don't care if he wasn't a Christian. He left us a Christian heritage. So even if God-hating secularists could prove that the, quote, religion all these men referred to so often in their writings was just religion in general, not particularly Christianity, it could have been Buddhism or Hinduism or anything. Even if they could prove that it was just general religion, not specifically Christian religion, that still wouldn't help them, because whatever religion these men were talking about, there's no denying that it is religion. It's religion. It's not secularism. Very few of the founders that call for a secular nation, 99% of them said that a nation needs religion to survive. Because without religion, there's no moral fabric. Everything's going to collapse. There's no restraint. So anyone who claims that America was founded as a secular nation, or that the intention of the founding fathers was to establish a secular nation, well, they've either been hopelessly brainwashed by an apostate public school system, or they're filthy liars with criminal minds. That's all there is to it. I'm going to play two clips tonight from this guy's video. Well, the reason I want to do this is to show that in addition to being a premeditated liar, Mr. Pinto is also a hypocrite. Because at the end of his film, after going through all these five men and proving that they were satanic scumbags, he demonstrates how easy it is to quote someone from the past, even from original documents, but yet draw the wrong conclusions from those quotes. And then he accuses the people who are using quotes from the founding fathers to prove that they're Christians or to prove this is a Christian nation or that it was built on Christian principles and all that. He says, you know, they're deliberately trying to see people. So let me play this first clip. I'm just going to do it through the mic tonight. It takes too much time to switch over. This is the longest one. The next one's a little shorter.
America and what the beliefs of the founders of the American Revolution were. Well, in that contention, I'm often asked, okay, well, what about David Barton? And David Barton, for those who don't know, is very well known in the Christian community for promoting the idea of America as a Christian nation. And one of his favorite tactics is to come out on stage with some old parchment-looking paper and so on and tell his audience that he's using original source documents, which I agree can be useful if you quote them in their full context. He contends that the American revolutionaries were somehow or other trying to support or promote Christianity in the formation of the United States. And I believe, of course, that that is provably wrong. It's a provably false argument based upon the available evidence. So in this section, what I want to do is talk about David Barton and talk about how he represents his information and how I really believe he manipulates historical data to make it look like the founders believe things that they didn't really. But to do that, to explain this to you, it's going to take a little while. But the first thing I want to do is to present you with two modern examples, two people that you know very well from our own government today. And I'm going to present you with a couple of quotes from these people and show you the kind of thing that I think David Barton is doing. So let's take a look. All right, my first extreme example is somebody that we all know, Barack Obama, President of the United States. And here we see a picture of Obama, right? And a quote out to the side. And it says, I believe that Jesus Christ died for my sins, and I am redeemed through him. Barack Obama, 44th President of the United States. Now, if you don't believe me, did Obama really say this? Well, here, let me show you an original source video clip of Barack Obama actually being interviewed by America's pastor, Rick Warren.
The first one is Christianity. Now, you've made no doubt about your faith in Jesus Christ. What does that mean to you? What does it mean to you to trust in Christ? And what does that mean on a daily basis? I mean, what does that really look like?
Well, as a starting point, it means I believe in that Jesus Christ died for my sins and that I am redeemed through him. That is a source of strength and sustenance on a daily basis. I know that I don't walk alone. And it means that those sins that I have on a fairly regular basis hopefully will be washed away.
So there you just saw an original source video clip of Barack Obama making a very clear confession of faith with Rick Warren, America's pastor, one of the best-selling Christian authors of the 20th and 21st century. Now just imagine, guys, imagine if we're 200 years in the future and you're flipping through a book written by, you know, David Barton the 12th or somebody like that, and here they've just got a picture of Obama and they've got a quote out to the side. Well, I believe that Jesus Christ died for my sins and I am redeemed through him. Well, what would you think? Well, your immediate thought would be, wow, look at that. Even in the 21st century, they were electing Christian presidents because they wanted to promote Christian values and principles in America. That's incredible, right? That's what you would think. Because you would have, 200 years from now, you would have no other information on Barack Obama to go on. You would just see a picture and you would see a quote out to the side. All right, so now let's look at, you're flipping through this book here, 200 years in the future. You see this picture of Obama, and now David Barton, he has another picture. Oh my goodness, look at that. It's Nancy Pelosi. And Nancy Pelosi says, "My favorite word is the word, and that is everything. It says it all for us." And you know the biblical reference, you know the gospel reference of the word. We have to give voice to what that means in terms of public policy in keeping with the values of the word. Nancy Pelosi, first female Speaker of the House. Wow. Amazing, isn't it? Well, now some of you might question whether or not Nancy Pelosi actually said this, but here, let's take a look.
They ask me all the time, what is your favorite this? What is your favorite that? What is your favorite that? Whatever. And at one time, what is your favorite word? And I said, my favorite word, that is really easy. My favorite word is the word. Is the word. And that is everything. It says it all for us. And you know the biblical reference, you know the gospel reference of the word. And that word is... we have to give voice to what that means in terms of public policy that would be in keeping with the values of the word. The word. Isn't it a beautiful word when you think of it? Just covers everything. Word. fill it in with anything you want, but of course we know it means the word was made flesh and dwelt amongst us. And that's the great mystery, other of our faith, where it will come again. It will come again. So we have to make sure we're prepared to answer in this life or otherwise as to how we have measured up.
Okay. Are you now convinced that Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama are both Christians who are promoting Christian values in America? Well, how would it be if somebody like David Barton came to your church and they put up a picture of Barack Obama and they showed this quote from Obama and they said, wow, this is proof that Obama's a Christian. And he's really, no, he's not a closet Muslim. No, he's really a Christian. Why? Because we've got an original source document here that says he's Christian. Okay? And if they then put up Nancy Pelosi and showed you this quote and tried to insist that she was a Christian, would you receive what they were saying? Probably not. If you're like most Christians that I know, your immediate concern would be, hey, wait a minute. If these guys are Christians, then how can they support things like gay marriage? How can they support things like partial birth abortion? This wicked and evil practice where they're literally stabbing babies in the back of the neck as they come out of their mother's womb to kill them. How could any real follower of our Lord Jesus Christ support such things? That would be your immediate concern, because you know more information about Obama and Pelosi than just an individual quote next to a picture, or an individual quote detached from the full context of who those people are. And that's what David Barton does. David Barton presents individual quotes about America's founders, but he detaches that information from the full context of who those men were and what they really believed in their lifetime.
So, you haven't seen his film, but I did. And the first thing you're going to note about watching that film, you have to listen to that particular part of it, is the fact that when you watch it, you'll notice about 85% of that film consists of pictures being flashed on the screen with quotes on the side, just like he says. So Mr. Pinto is using the very same style of communication as David Barton, only he's doing with a video and fancy transitions and nice emotional music. Okay, that's not too bad. And what he's saying there is true as far as that goes. When he says most of us would never believe Obama and Pelosi were genuine Christians just because someone showed us a picture of them with an original source quote of them claiming to be a Christian, we wouldn't believe that those quotes because we know how wicked they are. We know the kind of sin and the kind of iniquity they're promoting in the official capacity in their offices. So we wouldn't believe those quotes because we know that they're sinners. If you show that those quotes and those pictures to somebody 200 years from now and they don't know the background, they have no idea what Obama did, what she did, they'll just accept that they were Christians. But he's not going to accept that, and we don't accept that because we know how they're living. Well, then he's transferring that automatically to David Barton. Well, the first thing that's wrong with that is we know the kind of morality the founders of our nation propagated. We're not blind. We don't have just a quote and a picture to go by. There's plenty of historical records. And like I said, regardless of whether personal convictions, it's very clear that they did not promote in official capacity pornography, abortion, homosexual rights, and all the evil that Obama propagates, all right? So it doesn't match. If you're just doing what he says with Obama and Pelosi right now, that's fine. But to transfer that over to this David Barton guy and what's going on with the quotes of the past or past leaders doesn't necessarily hold true, because we know what their policies were, we know what they promoted, and we know what kind of government they gave us. So it doesn't hold water. He's just twisting the truth to deceive people. And of course, the clear implication is that since Mr. Pinto knows just how evil George Washington and Jefferson and Franklin and Adams were, people like David Barton, who are using selected quotes to prove that these people were Christian, they're not going to fool him because he knows the difference. He knows they weren't. And of course, he's insinuating that Mr. Barton also knows just how evil these people were. And so he's deliberately hiding the truth and only presenting one side of the picture in order to deceive his audience. Well, the fact is, that's exactly what Mr. Pinto does throughout his film. That's what he did with the Treaty of Tripoli and George Washington, for example. First of all, we said that Washington is the one who put Article 11 in the treaty to begin with. We know full well that George Washington didn't. Nobody believes George Washington put that article in there. Then he said that the Senate unanimously ratified the treaty, but he refused to tell the viewer the circumstances surrounding the ratification of that treaty, or refuses to tell the people that the anti-Christian reference to America in that clause was taken out of the new treaty. He does this thing throughout the film. He does it with Franklin. He does it with Washington. He also does it with Adams. The only person he actually tells the truth about is Paine, Thomas Paine, except for that he twists Thomas Paine's history to make him more important than he is and to make the guy that's watching the video think that Thomas Paine was really the guy that started the revolution and everybody's following his example. The rest of the historical facts about Paine are true, but even he was manipulating him with that. And he does this over and over again with all of the men that he treats in there, but especially with John Adams. First, he mentions a quote from one of Adams' talks, which would lead the viewer to think that John Adams at least supported Christianity if he wasn't a real Christian. And then he turns around and gives, you know, three or four conflicting quotes that would lead the viewer to think that just the opposite of Adams. It would think that in Adams' mind, all religions are equal. And as a matter of fact, Hinduism may even be the greatest religion of all. So I'm going to play that clip for you because I'm going to show you how he did this with Adams.
John Adams was America's second president and first vice president. He worked with Thomas Jefferson in helping to draft the Declaration of Independence. While it does not appear that Adams was a member of any secret group, he was a Unitarian
and shared views against Christianity, much like the other revolutionaries.
John Adams is often portrayed, in fact, I have friends of mine who are Christians, who will tell you that Adams was a Christian man. And Adams, there are a number of quotes from Adams where he talks about Christian principles and so on, and how he believes that it was Christian principles that brought about the founding of the United States.
But Adams did not mean that the United States was founded on Christian principles alone, but rather on a mix of Christian and pagan philosophies. He said, "These are what are called revolution principles. They are the principles of Aristotle and Plato, the principles of nature and eternal reason." Adams wrote that the general principles on which the fathers achieved independence were the general principles of Christianity. In favor of these general principles in philosophy, religion, and government, I could fill sheets of quotations from Rousseau and Voltaire. Adams' reference to Rousseau and Voltaire is strange, to say the least, since these two Enlightenment thinkers were both well known for their anti-Christian views. By combining the principles of Christianity with Voltaire, it is as though Adams is saying that the general principles of the founding of America were both the principles of God and the devil at the same time. With this in mind, consider that Adams once wrote to Thomas Jefferson, "I should have given my reason for rejoicing in Voltaire and company. It is because I believe they have done more to propagate religious liberty than Calvin or Luther."
If you study the founding fathers and the Enlightenment thinkers of this era, it's important to pay attention to the word religion. Okay? Because the word religion to them has to do with a framework of morality. When they say religion, they don't mean what we would mean today as Bible-believing Christians in the world today. What they mean by religion is just a system of conduct, really. They don't mean the testimony that Jesus is the Son of God and so on.
And so, for men like John Adams, the Christian religion did not mean the gospel. Adams wrote to Jefferson that when we say God is a spirit, we know what we mean. Let us be content, therefore, to believe him to be a spirit, that is, an essence that we know nothing of. But where did Adams get his belief? The pagan origin of his faith was revealed by him in a letter to Thomas Jefferson, where he made reference to an allegedly 5,000-year-old Indian book, the Shasta, the first book of Brahmin theology. He said, "Where is to be found theology more orthodox or philosophy more profound than in the introduction to the Shasta? God is one, creator of all, universal sphere. Search not the essence and the nature of the eternal who is one. Your research will be vain and presumptuous. The eternal willed to communicate of his essence and of his splendor to beings capable of perceiving it. The eternal willed, and he created Burma, Vitznau, and Sib. These doctrines," Adams says, "sublime, if ever there were any sublime, Pythagoras learned in India."
Sounds pretty damning evidence for Mr. Adams. It's obvious that he explored many different kinds of philosophies and religions during his life. And that means, of course, he wasn't a real genuine believer. Okay, however, the fact is this. There came a point in Adams' life when he had made a decision as to which religion was the best. And it was at that point in his life that he made the following kinds of statements. All right, one, he said, "The Christian religion is, above all, the religions that ever prevailed or existed, ancient or modern, the religion of wisdom, virtue, equity, and humanity." He said, "I have examined all religions, and the result is that the Bible is the best book in the world." He also said, suppose a nation in some distant region should take the Bible for their only law book, and every member should regulate his conduct by the precepts there exhibited. What a utopia, what a paradise would this region be? When Mr. Pinto says that when they talk about religion, they're just talking about a framework of ethics and conduct, that's true. But the fact is, the framework of ethics and conduct they're talking about is Christian conduct and Christian ethics and Christian principles. All right, they're not talking about Islam and Buddhism.